on now. Well, there you go. Good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and gators and grannies to this Sunday edition of The Big Puzzle. I am Barry Prince, and I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia. Beautiful day out there, and the sun is shining, and we are on People's Internet Radio, and we are a viewer-funded station, so please, if you can help the station at all and you like what we're doing over here, please reach into your pocket and help out. A little bit of a rough start there. I wasn't quite ready for the start there, guys. I hate that. I go 1, 2, 3, ready. Anyways, before I get my guest in here, I am going to be going away for a short while here. Every year for the last 4 years in a row, I've gone into the fires and harvested morel mushrooms. And it's kind of a lifestyle that I chose, being the one thing that I can still do right now that allows me to be a free man on the land. In other words, I can generate income and the government can't get their hands on it. And to me, I don't want to support my government any shape or form. So every year I go into the bush and I harvest mushrooms. I do the morels and I do chanterelles and pines, et cetera, et cetera. So I will be gone for 3 to 4 weeks and then I'll be back. So sorry about that, guys, but it's something I got to do. Today I'm joined by Ali Tagba. Ali is the editor-in-chief at the Post Millennial, one of the fastest growing publications in Canada. I've been looking at some of the numbers and some of the articles over there. Really, really fast growing and incredibly good organization and reaching a lot of people. Welcome to the show, Ali, and how are you doing today, sir?
Thank you for having me, Barry. I'm doing pretty well, sitting in my office in a beautiful sunny day in Montreal. And honestly, I'm pretty excited. Looking into the future, it looks like Canada is on the edge of something great. It looks like Canadians are just sort of waking up and asking for themselves what they want. And that's a fantastic thing. You know, we have in Canada one of the most educated, most resource-rich, largest open spaces in the world. And if we really develop it, we could be a game changer going forward. You know, like we're talking about an actual, you know, solution to carbon. All these things could happen in Canada if we're researching it and if we're investing in Canadian innovation and Canadian capability. And I think Canadians are finally waking up to that possibility, to what they're losing, and they're asking for it. So, you know, I'm very excited to see that.
Yeah, I see what I see right now, Ali, and I've experienced it really, really a lot of it in the last 3 weeks is large participation in groups now that are standing against the Canadian government, and the numbers in those groups growing exponentially. So I see a real awakening. Sure, we are a very, very rich, rich nation as far as resources go, yet we're one of the heaviest taxed nations in the world. If Canada was run properly, there wouldn't be any taxes necessary to be paid by the people, because you said, like I said, we have so much resource in this country, but the Canadian people don't see a penny of it. They see the wages they make to process or harvest these resources, but the rest of it doesn't stay in Canada. And if that could be changed, if we get to the bottom of the corporate structure and put the money back in the hands of the people, there wouldn't be such a thing as income tax in Canada, period. One of the things really I'd like to talk about today is that carbon tax they're trying to shove down our throat here, Ali. That is, to me, I've looked at it for hours and hours and hours. To me, it's the biggest scam ever pulled by a government on people, what this is going to do to our economy. It's just devastating, my friend.
Like, I got to come out and say this. I firmly believe in climate change, but the system that we're using to set up our electricity grids and the system we're using to control carbon, none of it makes sense. It's at every level, it's hurting Canadians.
Absolutely.
You start off by talking about the idea of environmentally renewable energy. And, you know, I support renewable energy. I would love to have 100% renewable energy in this country. But we have to be honest that renewable energy is not storable right now. It's unbelievably expensive to store, and it's not stable. You know, wind kind of comes in early mornings, it leaves at night. The sun is really strong in the day, and none of these things really coincide with the demand of individuals. So for us to have renewable energy, right, in this country, we also have to match it with equal capacity in non-renewable, stable energy from places like fossil fuels and coal. So at every time like right now at this moment, when we, you know, we build 2,000 solar panels, we have to go and build equal to that capacity at the same time, oil patents. Now, here's the weird thing. Environmentalists love to scream about the fact that green energy is now cheaper than fossil fuels. But that's a complete lie. The only reason that that number exists is because of multiple subsidies being applied. So at the first level, you have subsidies at the grid level. So when the renewables are on, you know, they're being paid. When they're off, oil is being paid. But the demand for oil has been, you know, radically changed because of the renewables being put into the market and, you know, given preference. So the price for oil is now higher because the oil engines are only operating for certain numbers of hours because those are the hours the renewables aren't operating. In either case, in those like few hours that they operate in, they're just unbelievably expensive. And then when we're using our renewables, they're normally unbelievably expensive because of the multiple layers of subsidies needed to get them there in the first place. And like the best example that I can give of this is like Germany. Right now, Germany produces like a third of their electricity from renewables. They've had these massive subsidies in place to get them in. And all these subsidies are about to end. Already we're seeing companies fail left and right the moment the subsidies end. So it's sort of like we're saying we're building renewables, but we're not. They're not actually efficient. They're not solving problems. So we're wasting money. Then we're taxing ourselves on fossil fuels, making it even harder for us to like efficiently grow.
Absolutely. Who's winning that? Well, you know, For one, you know, studies I've done, and I've looked at four different studies on the amount of trees that actually are growing on Canadian land, what we produce in megatons of carbon every year, and what those trees absorb in carbon. And we actually absorb more carbon than we produce. Anywhere from 10 to 15 times as much carbon as we produce, we absorb. So we're a carbon neutral country. We're absorbing carbon for the rest of the world based on our tree counts.
I've tried to vet that.
I've tried to dispute it and debunk it, and I cannot. So if
I don't think you can dispute what you're saying. As a country, we might be a negative producer, but I think the gist of it is that we're supposed to look at it by person. The amount each individual person produces in, you know, waste. And when you look at the individual usage, it's extremely high on a per capita basis. But again, that doesn't matter. If our country was actually being efficient, right, like not putting these subsidies in place, we could have so much more money to invest into actual research that would produce cars that take up less energy, that would produce storable batteries that would solve the global energy crisis. We would solve problems rather than putting Band-Aid solutions on them thinking, you know, we're helping the environment, we're really not.
You know, my thoughts on that, Ali, is I believe right now, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that we have the technology in place to produce free energy on this planet, either via solar, through static electricity, through fusion generators, through magnetic generators. And there's thousands of people working right now around the world. One of them is a lady friend of mine that I'm in very close contact with. It's a bit of a story, but it's called the Mueller generator. And you can Google that on YouTube. And what they did is simply put magnets and poles in an odd even configuration, and the amount of power they're producing is mind-boggling. I believe right now that the technology exists to completely get away from fossil fuels. Unfortunately, our economy and our world is run by the petrodollar. We know that.
The problem is really the storage. You know, like if you talk about nuclear is fantastic. You have environmentalists who are just attacking nuclear for almost no reason. And that is a real problem. And one of the problems with nuclear as well is a lot of the nuclear reactors haven't been updated. So their per like megawatt production costs now look really expensive in relation to other sources of energy. And that's just because nuclear has not been updated in some time. If we're not talking about nuclear, if we're talking about renewables like solar and wind, the problem is storage. Like you're right. Like we have great solar tech. I can't knock our solar tech. But the problem is you can't store solar energy. The same, like the batteries just don't last long enough. And that means that you only have energy while the sun is up. And here's the weird thing. There's this thing called the duck chart. It's like a drawing of the demand of energy in California throughout the day. And if you look at it, like the average human demand of energy is just, it doesn't match nature's production of energy. Because we wake up all in the morning, you know, you go to work, there's some, industrial use of energy. But then you get home at 6, 7 p.m. and the sun's down. The factories are still working, but now everyone's doing laundry, everyone's doing dishes, everyone's cleaning up their house. And that is the peak moment of energy consumption in the grid. In that one moment, if we do not have enough power, the cost of power per person becomes almost infinite. It becomes like $2,000 per second, like infinite increase. So that one moment, you have to have capacity. And right now we don't have storage. So the energy's there, but the moment it hits nighttime, it's not there. And then you have to switch to nuclear. You have to switch to fossil fuels. Maybe wind if there's enough wind, but wind is extremely, you know, guessworky.
Well, to me, Ali, I hope and I pray that nuclear is eliminated off this planet in the next generation, because to me, nuclear is one of the biggest threats the human race faces. And I have
Scary.
It is unbelievable. Well, one only right now, Ali, I talk about the Pacific Ocean. I started talking about the Pacific Ocean when I really started looking at Fukushima here about 7 years ago, when we really started seeing the problems right away that it was going to create in the future. You know that the Oregon and Washington state fisheries have shut down commercial and sports fishing this year. They've shut down the Skeena River, which is always full of fish right now. They've shut it down to fishing up here. People are going, what's going on? We have animals showing up, that fish showing up way underweight. We just had a humpback beach on the west coast of Vancouver Island. They opened up the stomach on this humpback, and there was 1,000 pounds of plastic in the stomach of this whale. What we're seeing right now is the death of the Pacific Ocean, and I defy anybody to prove me wrong, because it's just, I look at it this way. I look at studies all the time on the ocean, and I say to myself, if 50% of these studies are absolutely correct, then we are in major, major trouble right now. And I've got to attribute to Fukushima. And yet Fukushima, we have only started to hear from that. The problems that are going to be experienced in that reactor, they do not have the answers to the problems. They cannot stop Fukushima. We could be looking at the effects of that for the next 1,000 years. Well, that's just one series of nuclear power plants that have gone south. And they are what they call GE Mark V generators. They're the worst concept ever made for a nuclear power plant, because they store the fuel rods in the ceilings of these generators. Now the structures over there are starting to fall apart because of the high radioactivity inside the buildings. It's just a problem that's going to keep compounding and compounding. They've actually can't find the core. They sent robots in, and it's just too much radioactivity. I mean, the reports I read are just mind-boggling. And they're telling us, like Dr. Helen Caldicott. I mean, sure, there's a lot of things that she says I might not agree with, but she's all over top of this. And you know what? Nuclear power is going to kill the planet if we don't get rid of it. We have to stop it. We have to get rid of all these nuclear power plants that are sitting on coastal areas in the planet, which is, there's hundreds of them sitting on coastal areas.
Well, this is the thing. Like,
we're going to see tsunamis. We're going to see tsunamis, Ali. It's just a matter of time. It's inevitable.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, if we're even talking about this, you got to look at like Canada is really safe compared to a country like Iran. Iran's got like 6 nuclear reactors on some of the most
powerful,
unstable.
Yeah,
like unstable. What is it?
Ground.
Ridges? Yeah, there's nonstop earthquakes happening right beside these earthquakes. Sorry, beside these nuclear power plants.
Good idea.
So I don't think Canada has a massive problem with nuclear. I think we have to be unbelievably careful. And I think, you know, the management of nuclear plants can't be left to incapable people. But I also agree with you that, like, the Pacific, like, oceans and our treatment of the environment in general, like our capacity to handle garbage, is not meeting the requirements of people right now by any means.
Well, you can't keep pooping in your backyard and not expect it to smell like poop, man.
But this is the thing. We could solve this if we were properly investing in innovation and allowing businesses to solve these problems. Like, for
Absolutely.
Example, right now, people are living all across Canada in really random places. We're supposed to have suburbs, but at the same time, a lot of our, like, industrial, like, urban communities don't make sense. If we connected Montreal and Toronto together and made that one united community, you would suddenly have so much of Ontario and Quebec cluster around them. The efficiency would skyrocket, and we would have so much more of Ontario and Quebec left for wildlife. And you know, like the people who want to be in the rural areas will be happier because the rural areas will finally be clean again. There won't be unbelievably large numbers of people moving into the suburbs because we're connecting industrial areas and like dropping the price of houses so much. Like think about this. If Elon Musk comes in and builds a loop between Toronto and Montreal, a trip between Toronto and Montreal would take 30 minutes. You could live in Montreal where houses are one-third the cost of Toronto and work in Toronto. How many people in Toronto would be saved from poverty by being able to do that? And how many people in Quebec who can't find jobs will be able to find jobs in Toronto?
Interesting thought.
Yeah, there's just like so many of these problems that we could be solving through efficient, development and research. And every time it seems like people get emotional and then they think the government can solve it.
Well, the government doesn't seem to be looking after any of the problems I see going on right now, period. And we can talk about environment. We can talk about our financial situations. We can talk about our border. We can talk about anything right now. And the government doesn't seem to give two hoots about the people.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Sanctuary cities in Ontario?
Yeah, London, Ontario, classified now. It's got a Muslim mayor now, apparently, and a sanctuary city. I mean, what kind of lunacy is this? Now we've got thousands and thousands of illegals streaming across the border in Canada. Thousands of them, and they're not being vetted at all.
Yeah, I have no problem with the Muslim. I don't know anything about this Muslim mayor, but because I'm also Muslim myself. But on the other side, the people who hate illegal immigration the most are the people who went through the immigration system legally. These people went through a point system.
We're supposed to be a country of laws, man. We're supposed to be a country of laws. So what we have now is the law being broken every day at our border because of a third world safe country agreement, the United Nations policy. So that is overseeing our Canadian laws. That's circumventing our Canadian laws. We're having people come into the country. They're not being vetted properly. They're landing in American points of entry, getting an American visa, and heading directly to Canada and claiming asylum. I mean, I've been looking into this a lot, Ali. What is the government doing by allowing thousands of unvetted people to walk into our country? Immediately they're given social assistance. This is absolute lunacy. I mean, we are supposed to be a country of laws. We're supposed to have an immigration system where you apply to become an immigrant in Canada. You are vetted. Your background's looked at. you know, you're supposed to be able to contribute to our Canadian economy and our Canadian culture. You're supposed to be willing to assimilate to our Canadian culture and to be a contributing member of society. But we don't see that at all right now. We see thousands of people coming in, and the strain it's putting on our social structure is incredible.
Yeah, in Toronto, shelter space, over a third of shelter space right now is being used by refugees. And the problem here is that it's sevenfold almost. First, you have a prime minister who's tweeting for PR. When he's making these tweets about like, oh, refugees, you're all welcome here. It really isn't to tell refugees you're welcome here. It's a response to Trump. It's a moral high ground stumping for his base so that he can pretend he's on, you know, some high up mountain. And you know how I can tell that's what he's doing? He's not doing anything for most of the refugees who are coming in. At first you had 90% of the Haitians which were being deported, and the prime minister wasn't saying anything. So, you know, thousands of people were thinking they could come up to Canada. They would come up thinking that, wow, my life is now saved. And then 90% would be deported. What sick individual, really, like you have to think, what sick individual would think this is an okay situation? If I was the prime minister and I know, you know, helpless people are running up the border and they're really not going to get into Canada, the right moral thing would be to get on TV and say, hey, you're not going to get in. But that's not what the prime minister thinks. The prime minister thinks if I say that, my PR goes down. So he doesn't say that. Hmm. On the other side, you have thousands of people coming up who are literally like tourists. You know, there are Nigerian tourists coming in, dropping their iPhones by the border, and then coming through the border.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell does that say to actual immigrants?
That have been waiting to get into Canada. Exactly.
And then on another side, lunacy. These people who come in, even if, you know, they could have been accepted, They're now stuck in wait times that could become 11 years by 2011. You know, 11 years for you to figure out what the hell is going to go on with your life. And in those 11 years, you're not getting that much support because the government's trying to do this, you know, distance themselves from you in some way because they don't want to get the PR problems. And you're kind of helpless. You know, you might have border problems. We might get a border camp. You might just be lost in Canada. You might decide to do whatever. And all this is happening and the prime minister doesn't care. It's like there's a moral side to like having a border. It's not just that like we don't want certain people coming to Canada. It's that there is a moral reasoning to enforce that. It's good for Canadians. It's good for all legal immigrants who come. And it honestly is good for real refugees. Because if, you know, people on the refugee board are used to seeing fake case after fake case after fake case, they're going to become really skeptical when they get the real refugee. Mm. And then, like, what are we supposed to say? You should have just known better after, you know, you had to go through 30 cases of fake refugees back to back.
Well, what the numbers I've seen for this year coming up, Ali, projections are for 71,000 illegal immigrants coming into Canada.
And I can't see 71, but I think maybe 25 to 50.
I'm going by reports at the border of what's coming in every day, and it's being monitored by a lot of groups are monitoring it, and they're giving us pretty accurate numbers of who is walking in every day claiming asylum and actual illegals. And last year it was 50,000 came into our country in 2017, and the projections are for this year 71,000. I looked at three different sources. I might be a little high on that, but that's the projections. Even if that's close to the projection, you got to ask yourself, what is that going to do to our country? You mean, we're undermining the very social fabric of our country.
Yeah, well, it's not enough people to remove the fabric, but the number I had was we've already had 26,000 illegal claimants, which is equal to the 25,000 Syrian refugees we let in. And, you know, it took the government just a massive amount of resources to vet those individuals, and those individuals were in a war zone. So, you know, it was you had the presumption that everyone was a refugee and were just looking for security. With all the individuals who are coming up here, you don't have that presumption because there's a lot of economic migrants. And then you got to actually do the security check. And it's very hard to do security on the Canadian border. We have like a large, large border with the States, and it's not that well protected. You have gangs coming up already. You know, you have MS-13 gangs coming up. Your sanctuary cities being developed. I don't see how at some point something bad doesn't happen. And I'm not saying like terrorism. I'm just thinking like when you have such an open access, there is a benefit for illegal and dangerous groups to make use of that opening. It could be like biker gangs. It doesn't even have to be migrants. Literally just dangerous people between United States and Canada could use this opening to hurt both of our countries.
Well, we had a prime minister. I don't have the guy's name in front of me. I was just reading the information, and it was reported on mainstream that our prime minister just allowed a returning ISIS fighter coming out of the States that was convicted of murder to come back into Canada. He is now walking free on Canadian streets.
Oh, the one who said he cut off someone's head?
Yeah. But he was in the States. He's in the States. Came to the Canadian border, and he should have been arrested on the spot. They allowed him into Canada. He's walking free right now on the streets of Canada. What's going on there, really? Ali, what's going on? Why, you know, one of the prime minister's responsibilities, and this is one of the prime responsibilities of any prime minister of Canada, is to protect the citizens of that country, of this country. And if you are allowing somebody with that kind of radicalized thinking to walk on the streets of Canada free, we don't know how many are actually in the country. The government will not give us any information on this. When they first started talking about this program, they said, hey, we're going to reintegrate these guys into Western society. Don't worry about it. We're going to have them under surveillance, blah, 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 blah. I've heard reports up to 40 or 50 could be walking the streets of Canada right now. You don't think at one point they're going to pull off one of the same stunts they're pulling off many other countries in the world right now. I'm not against Muslims at all, Ali. I believe everybody has a right to live in this country if they want to be part of the economy, they want to assimilate to our culture and be supportive of what Canada is. But I have to look at what's going on in Europe right now. The radical faction of Islam is just absolutely out of control. We're looking almost at a state of civil war in European cities. German women can't walk the streets at night.
Did you catch there was two ISIS attacks today back to back. You had a family of six, including a 9-year-old and a 13-year-old, who all suicide bombed Indonesia, killing 41. Killing 13, hospitalizing 41. ISIS took credit for that. And then there was a stabbing of 5 or 6 in Paris, I think like 8 hours ago as well, and ISIS took credit for that. I got to say a few things. I think those 60 individuals are being monitored from last that I read. There's a lot of limitations in Canadian law. I'm surprised that I think the Liberal Party has put two cases against out of like the 60 who are in Canada against two of them. But there's a limitation on Canadian law. I'm surprised they haven't tried to enforce more or create more laws. On the other end, I don't think these 60 will be the ones who cause damage. They know they're being monitored. They know they're under watch. I think if there's going to be an attack in Canada, it's going to be a lone wolf who's been, you know, momentarily radicalized by finding a video or something stupid, and they go on a rampage. And that's really scary for Canadians. Because how in the fuck do you even – sorry for swearing, but how in the hell do you find these people?
Well, and also, you know, I'm not an expert on the Quran, but I've read it enough to understand what Taqiyya is, what jihad is, what the caliphate is, and what you know, we're walking on very thin ice as far as I'm concerned.
I think I do have to explain what Taqiyya is, because it gets kind of misused in a lot of ways. The typical idea is if you are being genuinely persecuted, because you have to think, what time is this happening? This is at a time where there's religious warfare. One religion wants to kill other religions, and that's just how society works at that time. You know, there's crusades, there's jihads, that's society at that moment. If a Christian comes up to you and has a knife to your throat and says, "Are you Muslim? And if you are, I will kill you in this moment," you're allowed to say, "I'm not Muslim." I don't understand how that could be taken in the wrong way for, like, that's the genuine, you know, idea behind it, of the religion. At the same time, though, that doesn't mean dangerous people look at that and find other ways to use it. You have, you know, Buddhist monks who are killing people in Southeast Asia. And they're being radicalized to a part of their religion. I don't think that's a representation of the Buddhist religion. I think, you know, there are evil people who are finding aspects of the religion that they can warp, and then they can use that to gain power. And Taqiyya is like a very easy thing to use to take power, especially if the people who are listening to you are poorly educated, poorly fed, and looking for something to do in their lives.
Well, again, I really kind of watch closely what's going on in Germany and France and England right now, and I have connections over there that I talk directly to, and you know, a lot of it gets downplayed, but I'm talking to people over there, and they said it's really at a point right now. They feel it's almost civil war coming.
Yeah, well, because Germany took in 1 million, and Germany never took in 1 million with the assumption that they were going to keep 1 million refugees. What they said to Europe was, "Look, we know you do not have the resources to vet 1 million refugees. So we will do the vetting for you, and then we will split them up among all the countries." The moment, you know, they said, "We'll do the vetting," all the other European countries were like, "We're not taking anybody." And then Germany got stuck with 1 million. And now, I don't think, you know, it's fine if your country does not want to take in refugees, but the EU is functioning supposedly as an EU, you know, as a European Union. And the fact that they did that to Germany is unbelievable to me. That's like, you know, us dealing with the border problem and then turning to Quebec and saying, "Everyone who comes has to stay in Quebec and you have to deal with it by yourself." Quebec would turn at us and be like, are you serious, guys? You're doing this to me?"
Well, Quebec is always already rebelling big time against the government.
No, but think if this was happening in BC, and then we turned to BC and said, "Okay, BC, you have to deal with all this problem by yourself."
We're building a wall,
right? So this whole 1 million thing in the refugees in Germany, that really shows you how ununited Europe is, that they did this to one of their own when the country took a bullet for themselves and said, we know you can't do the security checks. We know you guys can't do this. We'll do it for you. Then help us. I'm not surprised that Brexit happened. I'm really not.
Well, it's interesting times we live in, for sure. Canadian government. I mean, what did Trudeau just send away here a couple of weeks ago? 879 more million of our dollars to Saudi Arabia? Was that the number I read, Allie? And what's the justification for that?
I haven't read this. I didn't know this. What happened?
It's mainstream. It's not bull.
No, I've just been busy.
He sent another $879 million of our taxpayers' money to Saudi Arabia. I can go find the link and post it for people in chat, but it's legit.
Yeah, that's insane.
Why are you sending that much money to the richest country in the world?
Why are we sending them any money?
Why are we sending any money out of the country right now? We're so far in debt, we'll never pay it off. We're looking at, 2050 or 2046 before any chance now of a balanced budget, which promised by this government in their second year of power. I mean, this government has absolutely devastated our economy, and we're looking at right now a collective debt of over $1 trillion. I mean, we're looking at two generations to pay this off, or a generation and a half. I mean, you're spending your grandchildren's money right now, and we have no choice of where it's going. This government, I looked at the numbers for the money this government has sent out of the country since they come into power. I don't have them right in front of me, Allie, but I'm sure you've looked at them. It's unbelievable how much money they have sent to Mideastern countries.
It's not just that. Well, that's a big we need to redo. There's a problem with this idea of buying diplomacy. No longer are we trying to find people that we strategically and morally ally with for the long term, because we believe in what they stand for, because we have mutual interests, and because working together will actually benefit us. We don't really do that. We sort of just give aid to force people to believe what we believe. And that's just stupid, wrong, and it helps no one but make us poorer in the long end and make poor countries dependent on us. At the same time, you know, Trudeau, you're talking about the debt, and it's like, and we were talking about the carbon tax and all these things, and we know they're not going to help the environment, but what they are doing is lowering the competitive edge of our economy. And in a global capitalistic economy where, you know, a factory is not one factory, it's a part of a 20,000 factory supply chain where the tiniest part is built in every part of the world, losing competitiveness is the equivalent of death. We gave $220 million to Toyota when they had a $22 billion record profit year. So it's like we're paying off foreign people to have them believe what we believe. Then we're paying off corporations who are foreign corporations in Canada to get them to believe what we believe, which is that their company should be inefficient and that it's okay because Canadians will pay them literally billions of dollars for them to stay here. It's like, how much money can we burn to do things the wrong way?
And what is the underlying agenda? What is the bottom line agenda for everything we see going on right now in our government?
Well, I always wonder if it's stupidity. What if it's just stupidity?
It's not stupidity. It's not stupidity. Allie, come on. I mean, if you've done any – I mean, I'm sure you've looked into George Soros. You know who he is and what he's done in his life. And
yeah, but then on the other side, you have Cokes. You know, like the NDP side. I started out on the NDP side. I ran campaigns with them. And then, you know, I've become a very big moderate, maybe a little to the center right as I've gotten older. And the one thing I've noticed is – a lot of people in the game have this central belief in something, and regardless of the fact, they're here to just push that central belief. There's some people who are in the game and they're looking for facts, they're looking for information, and those are very important people. Those are, you know, the real independents who are the game changers. But the greater majority of people are not like that. And it's really scary, but it means that a lot of the times people are just incompetent and they're really happy to be incompetent. They believe in their incompetence.
Ignorance is blissful. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's like we're holding it deeply and we're going to keep going. And that's just the belief for a lot of people.
Yeah, unfortunately, Ali, there's still people out there that just really just don't want to know the truth, that want to be in the matrix, that believe their government is still working in their best behalf and that everything's fine and nothing bad can happen. This is Canada, blah, blah, blah.
Because well, I think Trudeau was there to say, first, I want to get reelected. That is the first goal of Trudeau. Then it's probably to run the country well. But the first thing, regardless, is him getting reelected. And that just makes it very hard to take a lot of the decisions he's made seriously. Because I think that's when you're talking about what is the agenda. The agenda is to get Trudeau reelected. That is what the agenda is.
What's the agenda for Canada? What has he done that's beneficial for – you name me one thing that he's really done beneficial for Canada since he's been in power.
And this is the thing. For Trudeau, that doesn't matter. His number one agenda is to get reelected, and that's what he's focusing on. And
well,
I think that's
– Canadians are waking up to that.
I'm hopeful. We're going to see. The election is coming up.
If we see another 4 years of him, then Canada's finished, Ali, period. We will become a third world cesspool. And that's where he's taking our economy right now. He's attacking the middle class. He's destroying our economy. If you look at the bank reports on Canada's economy, what the banks are saying right now, what all economic analysts are saying of what's going on inside of Canada, especially with the new carbon tax they're bringing in, he is destroying our economy. And the filter down effects we're going to really start to feel. Mm-hmm. So I know that his 2-hour meeting with George Savile or George Soros in Davos, he had a 2-hour closed door meeting with George and no press was allowed. Nobody but him and George sat and talked for 2 hours. Well, if anybody's looked into the history and know who George Soros is, you'll know that he's probably the biggest globalist on the planet today. And what I see Trudeau doing is exactly what Mr. Soros instructed him to do. I mean, you can't open up the borders the way you are in a country and not see the filter down effects. We see this going on, and yet our police forces aren't enforcing our immigration laws. So what is really happening here? We have a set of laws in Canada. We're supposed to be enforcing these laws, yet we have the RCMP actually at the border, you know, assisting these people to walk across so they can claim asylum. Like you said, Ali, they're coming from Nigeria. They have luxury luggage. They have 2 cell phones. They drop them at the border. They walk into Canada. One day after you're in Canada, they're getting a welfare check. And it's going to take them 2 years before their asylum claim can even be looked at. So where are these people going? What are they doing? There's nothing being monitored on this. This is craziness, man. It's insanity. It really is. I can't believe what I see going on at our borders. If that doesn't stink like treason to you, because, you know, treason is a word that we could talk about. I mean, the fact that he is allowing some of the most radical fighters in the world to be in Canada. They shouldn't be in the country for one. If they walk back into the country, they should be arrested.
Again,
they should be arrested.
It's hard to say treason. No, but it's hard to say treason because, you know, even under Harper, those individuals were in Canada. You know, we had individuals who had fought in for ISIS in Canada at that time. So this is the problem with the treason idea.
Any other country in the world, if that was the same situation, you had a returning radicalized ISIS fighter returned to Germany, they jail him.
They try. I mean, I got to be fair. Under Harper, 0 cases were tried. Under Trudeau, 2 cases have been tried. There is a real weakness in the Canadian legal, system. There's a real weakness right now. People need to be screaming at all levels to their local MPs that the Canadian legal system needs to change. That's the first thing.
Absolutely.
The second problem with the treason charges, again, this stuff has happened under previous prime ministers, so it's hard to push that. And again, I think that's the biggest thing. Like, it's happened before, and it's a local MP thing. If we push it, it'll change. And I think the Conservatives have started to talk about this seriously. And I think that's a good start. Like, you know, if they're starting to talk about it and, you know, we're starting to talk about it, it will become a mainstream issue soon enough. But one policy you should know in general, for a lot of these individuals who go and fight for ISIS, the policy from like ally command typically is kill on sight. Because if they come back to the country, the legal system for almost any country is fairly complex on this one issue. Mm-hmm. So like if you're fighting in Syria and a Canadian soldier sees you, they will probably try to shoot you dead instead of letting you come back. Which I think makes sense. Really, it's better to have like the terrorist die in there than come back here.
I just don't think they should be in Canada, period, and they shouldn't be walking the streets under any justification, because at one point, two of them are going to go rogue, and then Canadians will die, and we'll be going, wait a second, hold on, maybe we should do something about this. We need Canadians, like you said, scream at your MPs about this.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I can't agree with you more. This is like this, the border and these kinds of half-assed issues are truly dangerous. And the scary thing is, again, like the only way we can solve them is by it has to be a full on movement. People have to mobilize. People have to talk to their MPs, and people have to talk to their friends.
Do you know the Canadian lawsuit against of Trudeau right now is gaining unbelievable attention? I take my hat
the,
off
the this. Business.
Yeah, well, there's an organization right now, a class action lawsuit against the Trudeau government. It's on Facebook. You know, Stephen Myatt was the founder and starter. I've watched the numbers, and we're getting thousands and thousands of people now that are actually mailing off letters asking for the arrest of Justin Trudeau. And the reasons in the list of treasonous acts perpetrated by Trudeau, if you really look at it, if you look at the whole context of everything this guy's done since he's become Prime Minister of Canada, and if you look at all the issues, it'll point in one direction. I'll send you that letter and you can have a look at it, Ali, and read it. I'll mm-hmm. post it here in chat, but garnishing big time attention, because Canadians realize now that we are actually seeing a real threat to this country and the future of this country, a big threat. The enemy is within us, and the enemy is inside the Canadian government, and we got to put a stop to it, because if we don't, man, it's look at what's happened in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. If we give this guy another 6 years, I don't see Canada being a country.
Well, what do you think about what's happening in Ontario? Because I'm honestly with Doug Ford, because it's interesting what will happen with him in terms of, you know, the person who wins in Ontario will provide an infrastructure at the federal level.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they'll be steering it. But at the same time, Doug Ford gives Justin Trudeau an actual enemy that he could try to mobilize against, which is something I've been, I actually do like Doug as a candidate quite well. So I'm definitely not coming at this from a negative angle. I truly do like him as a candidate. But he provides that enemy that Trudeau might need in 2019, where, you know, Andrew Scheer is a very casual guy. It's very hard to make people hate Andrew Scheer, because he just kind of sits there and smiles.
Yep.
But Ford goes out there and says, this is what I believe. This is what's happening. And I love that, but it's something that I think Trudeau could mobilize against.
Well, you know, I've watched politicians for years, and you know, they always say what you want them to, they want you to hear, and when they get elected, it changes. But Doug Ford, I watch him interact with people. I watch the way he communicates with people, and I believe the guy's the real deal. I mean, any politician's got a little bit of bad laundry, we know that. But I think his heart's in the right place, and what he's saying is what he's really going to do. And if Kathleen Wynne is elected again in Ontario, then people really should go out and put a bullet in their head, because that woman has destroyed Ontario. If you look at the last 15 years under the Liberal, what's happened in Ontario, the manufacturing base, everything in Ontario. We talk about the sex education program. We talk about Hydro One. We talk about the gas plant scandals. It's just scandal after scandal after scandal after scandal. And Doug Ford would be a good thing for Ontario, Ali.
I definitely can't see.
And I don't support. I don't victory. I can't. And what's her popularity rating right now? The polls I'm seeing as low as 18, 20, 22%.
Yeah, she's definitely in third place now, far behind literally everybody else.
Mm-hmm. So unless they rig it and they scam it, you'll see Doug Ford become the next premier of Ontario.
Well, the scary thing is there's I was reading a recent poll, and it had it as basically the entire Liberal base has become so lost and so given up in this race that they're willing to switch to anybody at this point just to stop Ford. shows you just like how destroyed they are as a party. But the dangerous thing is if Ford, you know, doesn't keep the momentum that he has, then Andrea Horvath could gain enough votes to stop a majority victory. And that's just, I highly doubt that, especially since Ontario has terrible debates. Like, I didn't even get to see the second debate, and I'm someone who covers news for a living. But Doug needs to be careful. The Liberal base has basically given up, and people who have given up are actually very dangerous because they were willing to leave their party. They're willing to jump ship. And I think one thing that the conservative movement needs to start doing is they got to start launching silos at Andrea Horvath as well. I think she's ran a, you know, her and Ford have both ran very good campaigns. They've been, they've both been smart about this. I think they knew Kathleen was going to die for a very long time, and they've been preparing, and it's kind of just obvious. It's a good election to see. It's very interesting.
Yeah, that's coming up in about a month from now.
Well, the writ has been dropped. I think the actual vote is in about a month, not less.
Well, we see Jason Kenney gaining a lot of support in Alberta. We see a conservative movement across the country. I'm not, like I said, Ali, I would like to see Canada with 5 or 6 parties to give people a real wide scope of different opinions of what's going on. But unfortunately, we still see only 2 parties in Canada. I think that's part of our problem. You know, it's puppet on the right, puppet on the left. But I do see some strong views in the Conservative Party that I agree with. But I'm always going to be standoffish about any politician, because mm-hmm. we've been lied to too many times, buddy. I mean, how many times we all got hyped up about somebody saying something, and then boom, they get in, and everything changes. So, but I, you know, between him and the rest of the group, he would be a no-brainer in my world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I got to say about that one. Kathleen Wynne, I don't know how she ever got in, because she is the devil personified as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, the Liberals have a fantastic ground game, and they've built an infrastructure over, you know, 15 years of wins. And once a party has been dominant for that long, the infrastructure becomes very hard to beat. I remember even, you know, when I was running campaigns for the NDP, I was part of the campaign just having fun with them, really, because I was so young. We were so far behind the Liberals, and it was just because, like, the Liberals were just always so well mobilized. The unions were with them, you know, they had a lot of donations, and that makes it very hard. But I think for the first time ever, the Conservatives have a fantastic ground game. I think Ford Nation in general, their, you know, mayoral race is fairly tough. They're well organized, especially in areas where, you know, the Conservatives have typically lacked. And that combination has allowed them to finally really compete with the Liberals on the ground as well.
Well, we'll see in a month from now what happens.
Yeah, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are, because Ontario can't get any worse than it is right now. There's nowhere to go but up from here, because Ontario is a mess. The biggest, largest, what, the most indebted entity in the world right now, period. And why is that? Why is Canada so far in debt when we have so much resource? Unbelievable. But things are changing. We got talking about a lot of different things today. We got talking about nuclear, and boy, when we talked about, I'm going to get back on it just for 1 minute here, Ali, just to kind of really give people an idea how dangerous nuclear power is. One of the things that I did a couple of years ago is you can do this on your computer. You can punch up every known and active major fault line and minor fault line on the planet Earth today. And a lot of fault lines they don't even know about, but the ones that they know about are put on a map, and you can punch it out on a transparent piece of paper and then do the same search. Active and known active nuclear power plants on the planet Earth today, and you'll get a printout, and it'll show you every single nuclear power plant active on the planet Earth today. And if you lay the two over top of each other, and I did mm-hmm. this, you will literally fall off your chair, because 80% of the nuclear power plants today are within striking range of major fault lines that will have and are going to produce major earthquakes in the future. And here we've put nuclear power plants, which are extremely accessible, you know, susceptible to any kind of earth shaking. I mean, major meltdowns, backup systems. It's unbelievable the scenario we're laying down. It's like we're defying Mother Nature to say, hey, you know, these fault lines aren't going to do what they've done for tens of thousands of years again because we built a nuclear power plant here. This is lunacy. And if we don't get rid of it, we're only, what, 70 years into what nuclear power now, really since the proliferation of nuclear power, it's about 70 years. Well, look at the problems we have. And then look 100 years or 50 years or 20 years into the future when some of these major geological events happen and how many meltdowns can the planet Earth take. It doesn't matter if it's in Iran, if it doesn't matter if it's on the west coast of the United States of America. Nuclear fallout travels around the planet. And we're playing with fire, guys, period. We've got to get rid of nuclear. And we need to spend some of the money that we spend on weapons developing energy sources that don't rely on nuclear in my world. So that'd be my cry. To the human race, get rid of nuclear power in the future. My thoughts. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I would love to have fusion. I would love to have fusion.
Fusion generators are a reality.
Yeah, but they're just not efficient enough yet. They really aren't.
But you know what, Ali, if you know, we spend billions and billions and billions of dollars producing weapons to kill each other, and if we spend a third of that money on developing some of the technology, you would see advancements at light speed. But until we get that, out of our, until we can get away from the military industrial complex running this planet, we're not going to see the changes, but I believe they're there. And boy, I'll tell you, a little bit of money spent in the right places and a lot of the problems we could see, or we're seeing right now would disappear. And the hydrogen cell is just another example. It's unbelievable what we could develop. We're down to the last 5 minutes or 4 minutes here, Ali. I want you to tell people a little bit about post-millennial, some of the new offices you've set up and what you're doing and where people can find you.
Yeah, and, so we're growing pretty damn fast. I think at the end of this month we'll have about 330,000 users. I think last time we talked we were about 250.
Yep.
We had one office beforehand. We're now expanding to our second office, hopefully by mid-June, if not at the beginning of June. We're setting up our first like full-scale video studio alongside with a separate podcasting space because, you know, right now we've been doing it all out of one space. It's kind of limited. And we're now getting ready. We actually just launched the post-millennial Saskatchewan, Alberta, Quebec, Ontario, and the Atlantic, and British Columbia. So we'll be beginning to just provide local content. We'll be beginning to recruit local writers. We're actually hiring, you know, news writers, sponsored content writers, video producers, video editors, and just, you know, anyone who wants to get a part of, be part of that movement, you can check us out at thepostmillennial.com.
Cool. And it doesn't matter what your expertise is, your field of expertise, it's all contributing to the big cause.
Yeah.
There's multiple different things that can be done by different people. If we can bring them all together and get working on the same page, maybe we can see some of these changes that we need to make, guys, really quick. Because you know what, Ali, I don't think this planet's got a whole lot of time. I'm not a doomsayer, but I really honestly believe that if we don't make major changes in the way we're treating the Earth, we're going to be in big trouble in the very, very near future. Thanks for joining me, Ali. It's been a pleasure as always. And look forward to chatting with you in the near future again.
Okay, I do as well. Thank you for having me.
Get my office ready at the post-millennial, please.
Well, you'll be the first one to get a room in BC, I promise.
Okay, buddy, it's great having you on, and we're going to take a break here for about 5 minutes, folks, and we'll be right back with Sunshine. We're going to talk about natural cures, natural remedies, and things we can do to heal ourselves and heal the planet. So it should be a good hour coming up, guys. Hi, welcome back to second hour of the Big Puzzle. I'm just chatting on the break here with Sunshine. I'm joined by the second hour by Sunshine, and we're going to get talking about some natural cures, natural healings, and some of the things we're experiencing in our own lives by using naturals. And of course, I've talked about it many times, and I'm going to start this conversation off with the king of all mushrooms, which is Chaga. And that alone, folks, is made unbelievable differences in my body, and people that I'm sharing with in this community are just ecstatic about how their bodies feel after using Chaga for a couple, 3 months of their lives. It's one of the most incredible mushrooms, probably the highest antioxidants. It is the highest antioxidants of any plant in the world. and or any mushroom in the world. And that one alone is made an incredible difference. I just added dandelion tea back to my my diet, and I try and take rose hips tea and all kinds of stuff that I do that are natural seem to be having a big effect on me. How about you, Sunshine? How are you feeling these days? And welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
But I gotta always talk. I start talking about chaga right away because, man,
this will go on forever.
Well, you know what it is. It's more what people are telling me, and people want to. After a couple months, they literally want to come up and give you a hug because all of a sudden they don't feel their arthritis, or they notice this is changing or that's changing. And man, there's a lot of sick people out there. Sunshine, go ahead.
Yes, there is, and I was one of them. But here's the thing, like, I haven't been on the radio for a while. I've kind of taken a little bit of a hiatus. I really needed to because, you know, going down the rabbit hole can sometimes be pretty overwhelming. And it definitely is a mind game down there as well. And I really needed to just take a break from everything. I had some amazing experiences. I can't say whether they're positive or negative. They're just experience. And what has come out of that is for myself to really step my game up and start doing some of these things, actually doing some of these things that I talk about. And one of them is, you know, just getting my body and my mind healthier. And so you've been talking about the chaga mushroom for so long, and I finally got myself some, and you helped me make that, gave me instructions how to make the concentrate, and I've been adding that to my coffee every morning instead of creamer. I took all the sugar out of my whole coffee consumption and replaced it with that, you can look it up on the internet, folks. I recommend that you guys do all your own research into these natural healing herbs and things that we can do for ourselves. But it's an immune boosting superfood, and it really helps at the cellular level. And so I'm maybe about a month into it now, and I'm really starting to feel good. One of the other things that I did was just some simple stuff like, you know, going for a walk every day. I happen to get up with the sun every day and go for a walk now, and it's really got me back onto my regular clock. I'm a day person, always have been. Hello, sunshine. And so, yeah, these are the kinds of things that I'm doing.
Cool. Well, you know, let's just talk about sugar for 2 seconds, okay, Sunshine? Because, you know, in actuality, natural recurring sugar, stuff that hasn't been refined, is essential for your body. Because out of the 240 known saccharides in the world, which are sugars, there's 7 that support cell-to-cell communication in the human body. And you can research the 7 that support cell-to-cell communication, and you want to put that sugar in your body. It's like naturally occurring salt. It's essential to your body. Stuff that comes out of the store that's been refined, been processed, contains chemicals, anything that's white, you don't want to eat it. But it's important. It is. Go ahead.
Well, this is like if you learn anything about diabetes and what sugars are good for you and what sugars aren't good for you, like, we could all like do a study whether you have diabetes or not. I think that it's a really good way of learning about sugar and how sugar is processed in your body and what sugars are good for you. There's sugars in fruit that are absolutely totally essential, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. These natural sugars are very, very important for us. So absolutely. One of the other things that as far as diabetes goes, is the dandelion, and you were talking about that as well. And it does help fight diabetes, along with many other wonderful effects that dandelion can have. I've been drinking a detox tea every evening before I go to bed that I really, really like, and it's dandelion tea. And it really helps besides, you know, just a nice warm tea to end the day. What it does, the dandelion cleanses your liver. It helps to fight diabetes. It helps with skin infections. It's also an antioxidant, and it's rich in fiber and a good source of vitamin A. It's a diuretic. and prevents urinary tract infections. Those would be the top 10 benefits of dandelion. Who would have known, right?
Yeah, they're growing out in your yard and you want to dig them up and throw them away.
Right.
But, you know, it's important that you wait for your, you got to wait for the second flush. There's one of the studies I did on dandelions is you got to wait for the second flush of dandelions. And when you get the second crop coming in, after the first crop goes bluff, turns into a little fluffy, then they float away, you get a second crop growing. That's the roots you want out of that second flush.
That's great information to have if you're really growing your herb garden yourself and you're growing these natural things yourself. You really want to do that kind of research. And to those who have been doing it for a long time, how does it work? How do we do it?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Here's the thing about weeds, okay, because I recently, you know, because it's springtime, hello. Oh, by the way, happy Mother's Day to anybody out there who celebrates Mother's Day. I'm not sure which country we're talking to right now, but anybody listening in the U.S. or wherever you celebrate Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day. And more importantly, it's springtime, and this is the time to start planting and growing, and it's been an incredible spring here. So one of the things that it got me on this line of thought with the dandelion is because the dandelion is considered a weed, well, there's other weeds that are, like, super helpful to us. For instance, the what's called wild lettuce. Wild lettuce is considered a weed, and people like spray the, you know, their weed killer on top of that all day long. But wild lettuce is actually like a natural painkiller. And if it's, you can go right online and you can purchase that, or we can just start, you know, you got some growing in the crack of the sidewalk. You might want to take a look into what weeds are actually beneficial for you. We might not want to be pulling them all out of our garden and killing them with pesticides and that kind of thing. There's some real good benefits.
Well, no matter where you're...
You know, by taking wild lettuce, I think, you know? Let's get off big pharma.
Yeah, well, no matter where you live in the world, Sunshine, no matter where you are, you can get a book that will tell you what's beneficial growing in your forests and your fields in that particular area of the world. And it doesn't matter where you live, there's things you can harvest naturally that will benefit your body. So chag, unfortunately, has to be grown or has to come from a cold climate. So, like I mentioned before, the best chag in the world comes from Siberia. And the next best comes from northern Canada here, so we're right up there. I think you got Siberian chaga when you got yours.
Oh, I got the Canadian chaga.
Okay, yeah, okay, that was a Quebec site, correct?
I would have loved to have ordered it from you, Barry, but there is that whole, you know, trying to get things shipped, especially when it comes to fruits and vegetables and stuff like that, getting things shipped across, you know, country lines and stuff, which is really unfortunate because, you know, it's really important to understand that certain things grow in certain areas and we're really just restricting ourselves as the, you know, the populace of humanity in having access to all the beneficial things that are available to us, whether it's something that is grown in another country, that is a health benefit to everyone, or whether it's even a access to, you know, knowledge that is available, more readily available in other countries. I mean, the United States is unfortunately really closed off when it comes to our indoctrination and our, you know, the media and what we're told and what is kind of kept from us. Even in our under education system, it's the same way. We're not getting into, you know, these other, you know, ancient healing practices that use these herbs, and we're so denied that information, and it's really something that should be propagated worldwide.
Well, come on, of course we know why. I mean, Big Pharma makes billions of dollars selling the stuff that kills us. They don't want us to know about anything that's going to be beneficial that'll cut into their profit margins. We know how it's all set up. We know that Canada and the United States are the sickest countries in the world now. And we're supposed to be leaders. And boy, I'll tell you, the more you get back to the earth, the more you start looking into things that you can use that will really, really benefit your body. It's unfortunate, you know, people that live in the big cities and they don't really have a choice when they go to grocery stores about what they're buying. And unfortunately, a majority of their food now is GMOs, or it's been sprayed with pesticides, or it has glyphosate in it. I mean, glyphosate being used so widespread in the United States is incredible. It's showing up everywhere in our food chain. Our bodies are being bombarded with chemicals. So anything that you can get your hands on that will detoxify your body is a really good thing to do, especially if you're subjected to that kind of a diet. And like I said, a lot of people in big cities, they really don't have a choice. They go to the grocery store, and that's what's there. I'm in a little different situation where we grow our vegetables every year, and we have a choice about what we're eating. People in the big cities don't really have that choice. You can grow a lot of your own food in your own house.
You can grow a lot of your own food.
I was just going to say, you can grow a lot of your own food in your own house.
You can. And one of the great things I think that people should absolutely look into, because you are talking about big cities. I mean, and even I live here in a place, I don't have like a lot of land. I have like maybe a 6 foot by 6 foot square of dirt and a planting box that I can grow something in. But one of the things that I found really fascinating, and helpful, because if we talk about the chemtrails too, and you think about, well, what are they dropping on all of our food? You planting outside, unless you're growing inside a greenhouse, right? You're still going to be getting some kind of chemical added onto your food. So what about a garden, what they're called garden towers? Now, garden tower is something that you can actually go grow a 3 foot by 3 foot tower of, you know, everything that you could need and want to put into a garden salad and have it produced for you on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And eat healthy that way, knowing that it's all chemical free. So I would say that, you know, anybody who is thinking about planting a garden outside, think about the chemtrailing. If you're not keeping that in a greenhouse, you're still getting chemicals.
And you can Google that on YouTube, and it'll show you exactly what you're doing. You can also Google on YouTube aquaponics. My buddy up in the NAS has got a full functioning system now. He's had it going for about 4 months. He's harvesting fresh fish every day to eat, and he's harvesting vine ripened vegetables every day of his life. He buys wild rice as his staple, and he's telling me he's eating like this for about $150 a month after the initial $2,000 investment he spent to set up the pools, the filters, the pumps, and everything else. But Google that on the internet. $2,000, you can set your house up in a 9x10 or 9x12 foot room. You can set that room up to feed your family with fresh fish and fresh vegetables every day of your life. And you know it's not containing chemicals. Look it up, guys, aquaponics. I don't have the space right now to do it, but I will in the very near future here. And I will be setting that up. You can put 5 or 6 different varieties of fish in the pond. And if you have kids, you can go to the pond every night, give them a fishing rod, and let them stick the fishing rod in the pond. And they can catch dinner and take it out in the kitchen and prepare it. Pretty cool.
There you go.
It's my turn to fish
tonight. Put those kids to good use.
they'd be fighting over the fishing rod, you know?
They would be fighting over fishing, wouldn't they? Hey, you know what? You make it a whole family deal, you know, and that is exactly what we need to get back to, is really making our food preparation a family deal. You know, what a great time it is to be able to talk about, you know, what it is that we're doing to keep our minds and bodies healthy. But during the time that we're cooking, what a great way to teach our kids about what these different herbs and what these different, you know, foods are, superfoods that can really make a huge difference. And think about, if we were really feeding our kids really healthy and keeping their brains and their bodies functioning well, how much better they'd be doing in school.
Well, absolutely. I mean, isn't that kind of our responsibility as our caregiver to make sure that our children are eating right? You know, I mean, if we really look at what's in our food now, I mean, the reports are everywhere. It's not bull. Our food is toxic. And like I said, a lot of our food are is genetically modified. And I've done enough research in genetically modified foods to know that it's not good. So we combine that with the chemicals. Like you said, they're spraying chemicals in our sky consistently. And these are metal-based contaminants. And they're going to come to the earth because we got this thing called gravity. And it's going to end up in our soil. And the plants are going to absorb that and produce the plants that are containing those chemicals that are being sprayed into our sky. It's inevitable. So we're being bombarded. We're being bombarded. So how do you get away from it all? You got to grow in your own environment. You got to be responsible for the food you produce. And that might sound like a monumental task, but it really isn't that big of a task. And if you have soil that you want to be clean, plant some industrial hemp beside your plants and let it detoxify the soil for you. I've done studies on that. I won't talk about that right now, but that's something that just boggles my mind. Some of the studies I've done on the effects of industrial hemp when planted and how it detoxifies soil. It has the answers. Go ahead, Sunshine.
Yeah, I think that we really need to start paying attention too, because I know here in the United States that they're starting to pass laws, whether it's, you know, your local or whether it's on a federal level. They're passing laws left and right that are prohibiting us from, you know, growing our own food and doing things like that to maintain our own health. And if we don't start paying attention to that as well, we're going to lose all of our rights and abilities to be able to grow our own food.
Of course.
So that's a whole nother show, but it's something to talk about right at this point, I think, because we can do all of these things. And on top of that too, it's really important to know where a lot of these things are coming from. What is your source? Are you getting, you know, some of these teas and stuff from, where are they growing that stuff? You know, like this, you're talking about growing your own dandelion and making your own dandelion tea. Well, that would be ideal because you know exactly what soil you've grown it in, whether or not that soil has had any pesticides on it, whether, you know, this kind of thing. So ultimately, we really need to be knowledgeable about where we're getting our source food and where the soil is coming from, what country it's coming from, what are their practices there. And so there's a lot to educate ourselves on for sure.
It's hard getting around the soil issue because I don't think there's anywhere in the world you go right now where you wouldn't find contaminants in the soil. I mean, look how much geoengineering they've been doing for the last 20, 30 years. Some places, they're just saturating the sky. So that stuff has to end up in our soil. So it's really hard to get away from that. How do you get away from that? That's the monumental question. You got to, like I said, make sure that you have soil that isn't contaminated to grow your vegetables in, or else you're defeating the purpose. So that's a tough one. It really is.
Yeah. When it's only getting tougher, Barry. That's what we're talking about it, you know. I think it is really important to talk about, because soon enough, if we aren't on top of this, I think that people are waking up exponentially.
Well, I could solve it all. We could solve it all in 4 years, period. 4 years.
With the hemp.
If all chemtrailing was stopped tomorrow worldwide, and all the use of glyphosate, any kind of pesticide was stopped worldwide, and we reverted to natural pesticides, and we covered the earth with industrial hemp, covered it, in 3 years, it would be clean. Because that's how powerful cannabis is when it's planted on soils that are detoxified or toxic. And I've read numerous reports on it, and they just boggle my mind. Rick Simpson actually went to Japan to talk to the Japanese government. And you know who Rick Simpson is. He actually went to Japan and talked to their Minister of Environment about the effects of cannabis on nuclear isotopes. And the studies they're coming up with are absolutely mind-boggling. It actually eliminates nuclear isotopes in soil. Well, we know that nuclear power is an ongoing problem, and we're only going to start seeing more and more problems with it in the future. So here we have a solution to taking those toxins out of our soil. Look into that, guys. It's pretty interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I think we should just eliminate nuclear power altogether and just go with the whole, you know, solar energy and other forms of energy. You know, we've got the power plants that are in use now in the U.S. too, with the dam system. That's a whole nother a whole nother show. However, it is a source of electricity other than nuclear, which is so the waste. Nuclear waste is just what are we going to do if we don't start really upping our game into some more natural resources for energy? We're really shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, I'll push back against anybody that ever tells me that nuclear is safe and clean. And anybody believes that, man, I'll sell you a bridge in New York City or in San Francisco, because it is the farthest thing. Nuclear power was never produced. It was never given to the public to produce power. That was the cover. The actual reason for it coming into our society was the production of weapons-grade plutonium for the military-industrial complex. That's why they designed nuclear power plants to burn so hot and why they're so dangerous. So it's just a massive, massive scam being pulled on us. I don't want to get into nuclear too much. I talked a little bit about in the first hour of the show, but to me, it is absolutely committing suicide. That's what we're doing as a human race. We are committing suicide, whether we don't see it right now or not. But in the very near future, Sunshine, like I talked in the first hour, these geological events are going to happen. We have seen earthquakes in the 9.4 to 9.7. in the geological history of the planet. Maybe not in our lifetime, maybe not in the last 1,000 years, but this planet has created incredible earthquakes in the past, over the last tens of millions of years. And if one of those events happened right now, anywhere near a major nuclear power plant, you'd see a complete meltdown. And that, of course, would cause explosions, which could cause a chain reaction of other geological events that are on the tipping point. We have 5 or 6 situations like that right now in the world that are literally on tipping points. So we're really playing with fire. And me, I could eliminate all nuclear power tomorrow. That would be the best thing could ever happen. And sure, we're going to have to replace it. Yeah. We're going to have to replace it with something. But live in the dark for a couple. What would you rather do? Live in the dark for a couple of years or die? You know.
Well, the reality is,
give me a campfire.
There's worldwide, I think there's something like 460 some nuclear power plants, and a ridiculous number are leaking. I mean, a ridiculous number, and it's actually happening. These power plants are leaking nuclear waste. It's not just Fukushima. It's not just, you know, this accident here, this accident there. It is literally there's like a huge percentage of nuclear power plants that are in operation right now that are leaking nuclear waste. And it's a fact that is not in the mainstream media, but the information is out there. There are people who are doing that research and who can tell us those real, true today statistics. This isn't a future statistic. It is a today statistic.
Yeah,
so
we're being radiated to death, and people don't realize that. I wish I could get Lonnie Clark in here for a few minutes, because she just had one of her shows this week. She had two professors on, and people just don't realize what's going on with nuclear. Hanford alone is one of the biggest threats the United States is facing right now. People don't realize it. We have a nuclear dump under St. Louis that people don't really look at. I mean, we're seeing scrams every day at nuclear power plants. There's a site that will list scrams every day at every nuclear power plant in the United States of America, and we're seeing an increase in scrams all the time. My God, what are we doing, guys? This planet was never designed to stand up to nuclear waste. It was never designed to stand up to nuclear contamination. So what have we done in the last 70 years? I mean, are we going to be the people that actually exterminate life on this planet? I never thought I'd be able to say that to myself, Sunshine, that we could actually be looking at geological events that would trigger major meltdowns in 2 or 3 spots in the world. And the chain effect of that would be worldwide. We know right now that the Pacific Ocean is in massive trouble. We know that Washington State and Oregon State have shut down their commercial and their sports fisheries this year. They just shut down the Skeena and the Nass and the Fraser River to sports fishing in British Columbia. We're seeing the writing on the wall. We know our fish are coming in smaller. We're seeing the reports everywhere about the effects on the ocean. Well, all life begins in the ocean, Sunshine. If we lose the oceans, we lose all life on planet. And we could do that. Yeah, we're only looking at the effects of Fukushima. Really, I mean, to me, that is the major mitigating factor right now. But what happens if we get 5 or 6 more like that going off around the planet? and leaking into the ocean? What happens if we have an earthquake close to Fukushima and all those storage tanks of hundreds of millions of dollars or million gallons of the most toxic water in the world dumps into the Pacific Ocean? What are they going to say? Whoops, sorry, you can't fix this.
Well, and it's not just our sea life. I mean, the effects of Fukushima on the west coast of the northern west coast of the United States, the statistic is for human cases of thyroid disease are just skyrocket compared to other areas in the United States. Well, what is the reason for that? Hello, it's the radiation in the air from Fukushima. So, yeah, these things are going on, and, you know, this is what I was talking about as far as things becoming overwhelming when we start going down the rabbit hole, and how important it is to keep our own mind and body clear as possible so that we can actually deal with some of these things. This, I think, is part of what I found myself in a place of. My mind was so toxified, not just from not being as healthy as I could be physically in keeping the toxins out of my body, but it was making me unable to think clearly as well. Mm-hmm. And when we can't think clearly, we aren't comprehending things clearly, we can't come up with the solutions clearly. And so this is why I think it's so important to talk about these simple things that we can do that can make a huge difference in our ability to think clearly and start really implementing some of these solutions on a worldwide basis. Let's start with the self. Let's start with our own individual person. And I know that sometimes for myself, this urgency of what are we going to do? What are we going to do if we don't do something soon? We're right on this precipice. You know, it's whoa. I had to say, whoa, take a step back, get out of the urgency. Let's get back into balance. And where can I start that balance at? I needed to start balance within my own mind, body, and spirit and be able to really think more clearly about how do I get into a solution that's going to help humanity. I had to start doing some of those things for myself first.
Well, we do have the solutions. You know what? I don't like looking at this. Sometimes I don't even want to look at the information that I look at, and I don't want to believe that it's true, but I got to look at it because for people really to get involved in their own lives and making the changes that we talk about and really start looking at what we're doing to the planet, they have to understand the problems that the planet's facing. And a lot of people don't. I don't like going down those rabbit holes because it's depressing. I see what's happening to this beautiful planet of ours and it just tears me apart. It's so unnecessary. But really, if we look at the last 120 years of human history, we have done more damage to this planet in the last 120 years than any generation ever has, or hundreds and thousands of years that this planet has supported life, a life it's never faced the threats that it's facing right now. And I go, well, man, like, really, what is the most important thing in our lives? And that is being able to say to ourselves that our children are going to have a healthy future. And right now, they're not. So we have the solutions, but what is it going to take for people to look in the mirror and go, hey, wait a second, what's really important in my life? I mean, the new car, I mean, the new house, it doesn't mean anything. But if we're laying down a foundation for absolute famine and pestilence in the future for our children, to me, that's kind of like, that drives me nuts. And we have the solutions. We really do. I talk about hemp so much now. I mean, everything we're doing wrong to this planet could be turned around. But I'm at a point now where I'm not saying it's past the point of repair, but I think we're honestly getting close to that point. So what's it going to take for people to get involved? We get to that point, we see a major breakdown in the food chain, because eventually that will happen, or we see one of these major geological events happen, and we get a major nuclear explosion in the center of the United States, or two or three of them going off if the San Madre ever lets go, and it's overdue. It creates 8.2, 8.4 magnitude earthquakes, did it three times in 4 months, in 1811 and 1812. If that same event happened today, you would you'd be looking at the total decimation of the United States of America because of the chemical plants and the nuclear power plants that are on the Mississippi River Delta. Take a look at it, guys. It's mind blowing. So we're pushing the dragon here. I mean, to me, I don't want to be urgent about it, but I am urgent about it because I don't think that we have 20 or 30 years to get rid of nuclear power. It's going to kill us all. I can't see it any other way. I cannot. I don't want to be a doomsayer. I don't. I'm saying, hey, look and say, wait a second. We got
to
look at this. We got
to
look at this totally realistic. Huh? Well, yeah, but I'm not. I'm going like, the hell, guys, we're doing this, and we know about it. We're not doing anything to stop it, but we have the technology to change it. So what are you going to say to your kids?
Because you said it yourself, Barry. It's mind-blowing, okay? I don't want my mind to just be blown and doing nothing about it, you know? That's kind of where I'm at. Like, how can I prevent my mind to stop being in this state of mind-blowing, you know? I think that we become kind of... So you look at the world, right? And there's all this stuff going on. And then you bring it down. And you look at self, okay? Where does self fit in the world? It can be a really hard thing to face that I'm treating myself like shit. I'm treating my body like crap. I'm not healthy myself. So what's giving me the strength to go and do anything about making the planet healthy? So this is where I had to come back to getting myself healthy so that I had the strength to
deal with
face what's going on in the world. Really, you know, and I'll tell you, it has helped me tremendously just to face everyday life and what's thrown at me. To have a healthier state of being myself.
Yeah, I'm about to do that.
So I get where, like, you know, it can be very overwhelming looking at everything that's going on in the planet. And sometimes it can be really overwhelming at looking at what we're doing to ourselves and to our family. But it is about the little steps right now because, you know, I had to go back to keep it simple. And I have to believe that there is a collective kind of consciousness that is at play here as well, where if we are getting ourselves back into a healthy state of being, that state of our energy is going to reflect out into the world. It's going to reflect out into the people in our own lives. If I step my game up and make my state of being healthier, mind, body, spirit, then my children are going to see that. And, you know, my family is going to see that. My neighbor is going to see that. That is going to grow. I've had my neighbor say to me, "Are you out walking every day?" "Yeah, I sure am. I had to do something different." And she's like, "I need to get out walking every day too." Great. Hopefully I was an inspiration for her, you know, and that's all we can do is, like, Gary, are very inspirational in the things that you talk about. And I think that has a lot to do with your state of self-being, okay? You take care of yourself, you eat the right things, you exercise, you have a clear state of body and a clear state of mind to be able to comprehend what's going on in the world and be able to articulate to everybody these things that are happening and do it in a very balanced way, which you do, because it isn't just about doomsday. You also talk about the solutions. So this is a very balanced state of being that you have and are able to reflect out into the world. And there's a lot of people who are doing that. And so I'm just a little guy, right? I'm just your average Joe who said, okay, look, I've been down the rabbit hole for a minute. And that mind, the mind of the rabbit hole, can be a very toxic place. Oh, and so I had step back out of the rabbit hole and detoxify myself. And in doing that, it became even something more than just detoxifying my mind. it became detoxifying my body. And hopefully doing so, I can step back in and do my thing and be even more beneficial and helpful and clear about the things that I talk about.
I'm going to be doing that same thing right now. And unfortunately, I said earlier in the show, I'm going to be going off into the forest fires here for a month. The reason I do this, Sunshine, is there's two reasons. You know, 4 years ago, I looked at how the government was spending our money, how taxes are taken away from people, how we're slaves to the financial system. And at that point, I was making about $150,000 a year doing my job. I'm a journeyman floor layer. And I decided to walk away from that and harvest forest, become a forager. And I've been foraging actually for about 30 years, but this is a point now where I'm doing it for pretty well my living. And it allows me to still be a free man on the land. And it also connects me with the earth. And I know I'm going away for a little bit, and there's a side of me that doesn't want to go away because we're in a big fight right now. And I know I like getting on the radio here, and I like talking with people and having people on. But at this point, I'm going to go into the woods just for a little bit of time and recharge my batteries, and I'll come back swinging. But three years ago, Sunshine, give you an idea. Let me just finish. 3 years ago was my first year doing the morel mushrooms, and morels grow in the forest fire. So wherever you've had a forest fire in 2017, there'll be good morels growing in those forest fires. And 4 years ago, I went up to Carmax in the Yukon. It was my first time, and for 2 week period, I made almost $1,000 a day cash money for 2 weeks in a row. In 2 weeks, I had $13,200 in my pocket, cash money for 2 weeks. And that is very, very addictive, I'll tell you. This year, the fires, I'm excited. I told you on the show I'm getting excited about it because I got friends that are down there right now scouting out the fires. We had massive forest fires last year in British Columbia. We got hundreds of miles of road access, and I'm being told that there's tens of thousands of little nibs showing up. And in a week from now, I'm going to be in there getting dirty. So I'm going to go down and put 4 weeks in, and then I'll be back, and hopefully I don't go away too much more during the course of the year. But I won't be around, guys, for that.
Here it is, Jared. I think that's a great example. I think that's a great example of
lifestyle. If you're going to talk the talk, you got to walk the walk. Okay?
Right. It's a lifestyle change that you made. You got out of the whole corporate world, you know, making whatever kind of money, but that was kind of feeding back into the system, basically. And so you have figured out a way to be able to make enough money to on an annual basis to support yourself and still do what you love to do. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, help other people as well. So
I'm providing food.
Right? Everybody has that same kind of opportunity, though. Those opportunities are out there. There's really a huge shift that's going on in, you know, the world right now where people are becoming more aware of kind of these natural ways of being able, these ancient natural ways of being able to heal ourselves and help ourselves and re-energize ourselves and ground ourselves and just become more balanced and aware and healthier humans. Okay. And in that shift, I think that there's a lot of opportunity for people to find this new path of feeling fulfilled to where it isn't about keeping up with the Joneses and being enslaved to the systems that, you know, are killing us. We have opportunities to be able to make a living at doing something that we really love that also helps other people. And this is what I would encourage people to start looking into, all these ancient healing and healthy practices that are coming back into our conscious awareness. And find your niche, find your creative niche. You know, if you are, I've talked in the past about like the Tesla coils and creating pieces of art that are energetic And this is not new technology. This isn't new knowledge. Most of this is ancient knowledge that's been hidden from all of us, where, you know, our plants are alive just as much as we are alive. The rocks are alive. Crystal rocks have an energy and a life to themselves and have healing properties as well. So you've got natural plant life. You've got natural, you know, rocks that are about energy and healing. You've got, you know, energy, not just like using the Tesla technology and coiling copper and creating a more positive ionic energy in our environment, but also that can be used. We already know that this technology could be the world energy, the world free energy, to where, imagine if that bill was eliminated just from your monthly life. This energy bill, it's one of those bills, the food bill, the energy bill, the pharma bill, all these bills that require money that we could just eliminate from our lives almost immediately if we were to study and learn about how we can self-sustain. Are you there, Barry?
Yeah, no, yeah, I lost you. No, you went dead, and then I didn't know if you were stopped talking or if you were still talking.
Yeah, I'm self-sustained.
Well, no, it went dead for a second, and then I didn't know if you stopped talking. Yeah, you're absolutely right, but you know what? Until we can get away from the petrodollar, until we can get away from the monopolies that control our lives, that's not going to happen. But when people really start to think about ways you can get away from the monopolies, you know, I mean, look at 150 years ago. How many bills did we have? Did we have such things as bills coming? No, we didn't. We bartered in society. Bills started showing up around what, the turn of the century? Now you get a bill for just about everything you ever do. I mean, you got to have insurance, mortgage, car, blah, 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 blah. The list is never ending. So we're just enslaving ourselves in a system that we don't even need. We're enslaving ourselves in a system that's destroying our planet, and we're supporting it, and we don't realize it, period.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes it might take some sacrifice, but anything worth anything kind of sort of does, you know?
Really, you know what?
In the short run, really does. Because it's not easy for me to get up every day at sunrise and go for a walk. And well, I'm a day person. I get up with sunrise, but it's the going for a walk part that, I mean, I literally some days have to just force myself because I really don't want to. But I know that if I do, it's going to do me a lot better in the long run than if I don't. Well, so this is kind of a little sacrifice off that I have to make for myself. And it is, okay, I got to force myself to do it, force myself to eat better, force myself to. And I really, this is kind of, I want to, but I'm still at that stage in some ways where I literally have to force myself. Because old habits, I'm not, you know, like it's teaching an old dog new tricks, man.
Well, I fight that battle every time I walk by the cookie aisle. I fight that same battle every time I walk by the cookie aisle in the store. I really do. It's like one side of me is going that way and the other side's going, nah, go over and get some oranges and some apples. And that side. Every once in a while, though, I subconsciously grab a bag, and but very, very few, far between.
You subconsciously, like how you subconsciously.
Old days, it was like grab 3 bags of cookies and let's go home, watch, have dinner.
Great. Subconsciously open up the freezer and you know, eat that ice cream sandwich that accidentally ended up in my chopping cart, right? Yeah,
I wish everybody could experience what I'm going to experience here in the next month, though. Sunshine, I really do.
They can have that experience. I just went back up to the Redwoods again, Barry.
I know, but it's getting out. I'm working my body right to the core every day. You push yourself right to the limit. You're around campfires, you're out woods. We build a sauna when we go up there because we're working in forest fires. So at the end of the day, you look like Toby. The only thing that really bugs the crap out of you is the mosquitoes, but after a while, they don't bother you. because they've bitten you so many times you become immune and they won't bother you anymore.
I had that mosquito thing going on in the Redwoods,
We build a sauna
those
every
suckers
night.
Can bite right through your pants if you're wearing thin pants. I'm telling you, that's craziness. They really can. And then you're going like, well, what kind of natural way can I, repel these mosquitoes? Because you know that the mosquito repellent that they make for us to buy off the shelf is full of toxins and poisons. And all these little things that we have to start thinking about, folks. You know, it says right on the bottle, and I'm going to use sunscreen as an example. It says right on the bottle, do not drink. Okay. Well, it says do not drink because there's all kinds of poison in it. It's probably not a good idea. But you're putting it on your skin, and your skin actually absorbs stuff way faster than if you were to ingest it. So, you know, we really have to start thinking for ourselves, folks, because these people who are making these toxic products for us, they really are not in the business of trying to keep us healthy. Now, there are people and companies out there that do make natural stuff. Toothpaste, okay? I just a couple months ago made the transition away from fluorinated toothpaste. And then I drink coffee every day and wasn't even thinking that I drink bottled water, right? But I wasn't even thinking that I was making my coffee with fluorinated water. Okay. Or how about whatever other food that I'm making that requires a cup of water? Am I getting it out of the faucet or am I doing the bottled water thing? I mean, this is the craziness of like really starting to think for ourselves. And what is it that we're doing on a moment to moment basis? How are you toxifying or detoxifying your body and your mind? And so there's all kinds of little things, you know, if you can afford a filter system on all of your water that's coming into your house, because honestly, we're showering in water that's filled with fluoride. Unless we, and I'm going to talk about the United States, unless we collectively say, hey, no more fluoride in the water, it's a neurotoxin, then we're all filling showers in fluorinated water.
Mm-hmm. And to go have a bath in a tub of fluoridated water, you want to read the numbers of what you're actually absorbing by sitting in a bathtub for half an hour full of water that's containing fluoride. You think ingesting it is bad. Oh, unbelievable. And yet it's still in our water system and we're still drinking it. I'm not, but people still are. If that ain't enough to wake people up, I don't know what's going to happen. But we see a big push against fluoride now. Government lowered their recommended dosage to half because of the incidence of dental fluorosis in the United States of America, widespread. If it's doing that to our teeth, sunshine, what's it doing to the rest of the organs in our body? What a lunacy, eh?
It's calcifying things is what it's doing. I mean,
your pineal gland brings on arthritis, causes cancer, blah, blah, blah. Nothing to worry about. Right. But you got good teeth. When you go to the grave, you're going to have good teeth.
It's worth
you
pretty good
smile. On. Well, look, you got to have a smile when you're in the coffin, right? So.
Right, right. Hey, when they dig up those bones 1,000 years later, your teeth are still going to look great.
Yeah, somebody will go dig you up in 1,000 years and use them again. What a great concept. Anyways,
Gary, it's been so awesome talking to you on the radio because honestly, it's great to laugh when we talk about some of these things as well. I think it's just really important to have that whole balance too, and in laughter. And I know that I just got so overwhelmed with the negative, and then I got so overwhelmed by some other studying that I was doing that. There was just so much, and sometimes it just thinks like there's just so much. I just don't know how I could possibly consume it all and make all the changes that I need to make. It just seems overwhelming. And I'm just saying, take one step at a time. Take a step back for a minute. Get yourself centered and grounded. Find some laughter and happiness. I'm telling you, go out and hug a tree and laugh laying under the tree. I did that recently. I was really upset, and I ended up laying down in the grass, looking up at this tree, and ended up having a laugh fest. And it was crazy.
Can somebody order the ambulance, please? They're coming to take me away.
I was okay.
Hey, you want even a better experience, Sunshine? Take your shoes off and walk in the grass, man. And stand exactly. in the grass, see how that feels. Unbelievable. It's so important that we connect with the earth. Absolutely. She'll tell you that we're hurting her, and we don't want to hurt her. And she's asking us why.
Yeah. I agree.
Why are we killing the one thing that sustains all life? And I think it's going to take a major change in human heart to really kind of look at this the way we should be looking at it. Look in the mirror every day and say, well, we know about this stuff. You know, we know now that there's all these problems coming. And if we don't get involved to stop it, then we're going to have to look our children in the face in 10 years and say, hey, we knew about this, but we're really sorry there's no food on the table, or the food that's on the table you can't eat because of the levels of radiation. I'm sorry about the growths that are coming on your head at 3 or 4 years old. I'm sorry about the death and the pestilence. We're going to have to say that to them, and I don't want to say that. But that's what I see coming, Sunshine. I do. I just can't. I'm not a doomsday. I just got to look at it realistically. Everything, I try and look at everything realistically based on what I see going on right now, and then project it 10, 20 years down the road. And boy, I'll tell you, if we don't start addressing these problems right now, our children are going to curse us. And I don't know how else to put it. Period.
Well, Barry, you know, for myself, I had to look in the mirror and tell myself that I was sorry. I had to tell myself that I'm sorry that I treated myself so poorly. I'm sorry that I treated my body so poorly. I'm sorry that I treated my mind so poorly. I had to say I'm sorry to myself and forgive myself and then step up my game. And that's kind of what I've been doing over the past few months, and what the place that I ultimately ended up finding myself at. And I want people to know that we don't have to stay stuck in beating ourselves up for all of our wrongs. We don't even have to beat ourselves up for ignoring everything that's gone on for so long. You just have to say, I'm sorry, and then forgive yourself, and then try again the next day. And try and do something better. Try and do something different. And it is possible. And next thing you know, within a week, within a few days even, you're in a better space. And the daily affirmations, take a little sticky note, write, I love myself and respect myself today. Put that up on your mirror. And every time you go to the bathroom, say to yourself, I love myself and respect myself today. And once we start doing that for ourselves, then we can start moving on to our family and the rest of humanity.
Cool. Annie says hello to you in chat. She wanted to say hello.
Oh, so, Annie. Hi, Annie. I love you, hun.
I meant to say that earlier, but it slipped my mind. We got talking. So we're down to the last couple minutes of the show here. I'm going to give you a last quick thought there, Sunshine, and I'm going to shut the show out and go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say that, you know, I've always known in my inner state of being that anything is possible through love. And it does start with self-love. Love yourself, love your neighbor, treat yourself as you would have your neighbor treat you. Treat yourself as you would have your spirit self treat you, whatever your connection to spirit, your God, your whatever it is that works for you. Connect with that. Spend a moment reconnecting with that that is within inside yourself. And love yourself again, and let's love each other and the world again.
Well, thanks for joining me, Sunshine. Always a pleasure having you on.
Thank you, Barry. Thanks for having me.
And also, thanks for doing my memes for my show. Sunshine does my memes for all my show, guys. So thanks for doing that. And thanks for your support.
By the time you get back a month from now, I'll have an intro ready for you as well.
Cool. Well, you know what? I really don't want to go away, Sunshine. You know, I'm in the fight right now, and I know things are getting crazy out there. But Like I said, this is a choice I made, and I don't want to support the enemy. And by paying taxes, I'm supporting the enemy. So I'm trying to do everything I can not to support the enemy that's killing me. So I'll be back in about 4 weeks, guys. And during that course of time, I don't know, maybe Sunshine might want to step in and do a couple shows for me if the network wants. Or if not, hopefully they'll let me come back in a month, and I'll be able to talk to you again.
It'll be my pleasure, and we're going to miss you, Barry. But we'll see when you get back for sure.
Okay, guys. Well, I don't know what else to say. We've said a lot today, and I don't know what else to say. Thanks a lot, folks.
We'll see you in a month, Barry. You're doing awesome.
I'm a little bit spoosh.
Lost your audio, Barry. I don't know what you did.
I don't know what he did. He's about to cry, I think.
I hit the wrong button again. I didn't mean to do that. Anyways, I will be back, guys, after my little excursion in the bush, and we'll see you when I get back. Love you all. God bless you all, and be safe. And I'll be thinking of you.